What should SEOs know about analytics? Hello and welcome to the March 2024 edition of the Majestic SEO Panel, where we're covering key aspects of analytics that SEOs should know about, but don't necessarily know about. I'm your host, David Bain, and joining me today are four wonderful analytics for SEO experts. So let's find out who exactly they are. So starting off with Andy.
Thank you for the invitation. My name is Andy Crestodina. I'm the co-founder of a digital agency focused on websites called Orbit Media Studios. We're here in Chicago. It's a 55-person agency that does SEO and web development. So I've done analytics and SEO for 23 years, going back prior to Google Analytics and going back prior to the era in which Google dominated search. So I love the topic and I'm glad to be here and hopefully can add a little value.
Oh, superb. Well, StatCounter was my first analytics tool before Urchin. And I'm sure you can possibly go back further than
that.
So.
Yep, I used WebTrends, I used Urchin, I was there.
Wow. Also joining us today is Sebastian.
Yeah, so my name is Sebastian Monnier. I have my own agency called Woptimo based in Paris. And I've been doing SEO and analytics for ages as well. Remember, I created the Google Analytics account on the very first day. It was opened in October 2005. And I worked a little bit for Google in Dublin. And then I have my own company. We do data and analytics and SEO.
Wow. Coming up to nearly 20 years of Google Analytics. That's
I know.
Quite incredible. You don't want to know that, do you? Also joining us today is Dana.
Hi, I'm Dana DiTomaso. I'm also one of the aged people here. I've been working in this field for 24 years now. I started out actually in SEO because I was making websites in Dreamweaver, if you remember those days. And my first client said to me, how do I get on Google? And I said, I don't know. I'll get back to you. And then I found out I liked SEO and I was way better at it than I was at making websites. So I did SEO for a long time. And then around 2006, 2007, I'd always used Google Analytics, but I hadn't really gotten into it too deeply. And I decided to switch my focus from SEO to analytics. And so I've been basically investing full time in that. One of the things that I'm glad for is my SEO experience, because then it helps me, you know, bridge the gap between analysts and SEOs.
And Dreamweaver Ultra Dev was a course that I did about 20 years ago as well. Mm-hmm. And I know it seems like a long time ago and not particularly relevant to how SEO is done nowadays, but those WYSIWYG editors where you could see the code and see the design at the same time was a wonderful way to learn HTML and just figure out what was impacted by the changes that you made.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think actually that experience really lends well to the work I do now with Google Tag Manager. So to actually talk about what I do. So I'm founder and lead instructor at Kickpoint Playbook, which is an education platform. And that comes from Kickpoint, which is my digital marketing agency where I'm president. And at Kickpoint Playbook, that was born out of seeing basically a lot of bad analytics implementations over the years and saying, you know what, we can't fix all of these. Let's teach people how to fix them. So our first course is Analytics for Agencies, which came out last year. And then we have a practical GA4 course coming out in just a few weeks. It covers GA4 top to bottom. So I'm really trying to get education out there in the world. And I think that, you know, learning basic HTML is important, but because it helps you a lot with Tag Manager, but it isn't something necessarily that is covered in school really so much anymore, because we've gotten away from that, you know, basics of web building, because you don't really need it in a lot of cases. But I think that experience really does serve me well.
Absolutely superb. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Dana. And Gemma, don't tell me you've been in the industry for 24 years.
No, not really. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me here. I'm Gemma. I'm the co-founder of Orbit Digital, a marketing consultancy that we are based here in Barcelona, in Spain. We were founded last year, so we still have not been in the market for so many years, although I've been in the SEO and the analytics world for some years now. Well, the good thing is like GA4 is new for everybody, so at least in this tool we are all, or more or less, figuring it out a little bit in the same time. So I think this is great for the ones that we are arriving later to the party too. So thanks a lot for having me here.
Well, thanks for joining, Gemma. And we'll stick with you, Gemma. And the first question that we'll focus in on is GA4. And you've created a Google Sheet that includes the key elements setting up GA4. So I know we have many listeners to this show. We're going to share a spreadsheet basic just for a moment or two, but obviously you'll talk people through the spreadsheet and hopefully it'll make sense for listeners as well. So that's up on the screen here. So what have we got?
Okay, nice. You can see, right? Yeah. So yes, we prepare these checklist in order to set up in a proper way GA4. Here it's important to know that obviously every website has some, you know, different things that they need to take into account. But in the general level, these are the three big things based in three groups that you need to do or you need, you know, to validate that you have when you set up a GA4 account. So first of all, it's the initial configuration. Here for the initial configuration, you need to check that you have all the basic things set up. And what is this? It's basically that you have set up analytics in your website or in your app, it depends, but in this case, in a website focus, that you add a data stream for your site. And in case that you have, you know, all the things that you can accept, I mean, Google Signals, you can activate Google Signals if you have all your, you know, legal website that informs this to your audience too. So these will be the three principal things that you need to do in order for your initial configurations that you need to do, either if you have, I don't know, a Google Ads account where you want to link your account, or you are a B2B website, or if you are an e-commerce website. These are like the three first things that you need to do.
Quickly go to the rest of the panel and just ask anyone if they'd like to add anything or not disagree with anything. But Andy, Sebastian, Dana, do you have anything to add to what Gemma's been sharing there?
I would say the biggest thing that I always make people check is the data retention settings, which probably is covered if you scroll down a little bit. The default is 2 months, change that to 14 months. What that does is it doesn't remove your data out of GA4 after 14 months. That's what people think it means. It's not. Your data will still be there. What is going to be missing are the data you can get in explorations, which is really like the good detailed data. You want that. So make sure to keep that for 14 months. Otherwise, you're going to lose it after 2, which is way too short of a time to do any sort of analysis really in explorations at all. So that's, and of course, Google setting the default to 2 months because they don't want to pay for your data storage. So make sure to go into the admin after you've set up GA4 or right now if you've already set it up, go into data retention, change those dropdowns to 14 months, click save.
So I don't have it, but I agree with you that it's important to have it here.
It's crazy to me that 2 months is even the default. I mean, who can do analysis on 2 months of data? Yeah. I mean, the comparison date range selector has compared to, you know, it has 90 days and compared to last year. And how could you even use those buttons if you didn't change your data retention settings to 14 months? And even 14 months to me seems low.
Oh, yeah. Especially for sure. Compared to GA3, where you could basically create segments for years, you know.
Yeah, Google's tired of paying for your storage is my takeaway with GA4.
It's up to 50 months when you are paid GA4 user. Mm-hmm. So 50 months is okay. So basically you have to pay.
Right, okay. Yeah, Gemma, do you
really
want to...
Important.
Yeah, I can move on. So yeah, once you have this, also I will add the data retention because it's not here. Always what we do is, first of all, we link the GA4 account with other tools that we think that are important for this website. Here, I point out some things that are very common in every website, such as, you know, link it to a Google Ads account, a Google Search Console account, or a Google Tag Manager account. However, there are more things that you can link your tool depending on your objectives. I don't know if you want to add something else that you think that will be a priority here in order to link your account.
I don't use that much the Google Search Console links, because the thing is that I always think it's a little bit confusing to have a Search Console and GA4 data in the same interface. What I rather do is to, maybe we'll talk about that later, is to export a GA4 data into BigQuery and do the same with Search Console, because now there is a native interface for that. And so basically, then when you have that in BigQuery, you can really have the full potential of this data, and then you can merge it, and then you can really have data beyond the 16 months limitations of Google Search Console, which is much better than what you have in GA4.
Something I'll add to that as well is that I find that sometimes people will set up the GA4 connector to BigQuery, and then they'll open up Looker Studio and try to report on that GA4 data in Looker Studio. It's not set up great for doing that. You might think of BigQuery like a giant spreadsheet. Really what you think of with GA4 data in BigQuery is one giant spreadsheet with lots of little embedded spreadsheets, because it's what's called a nested array. You have to unnest it before you can really use it. So the moral of the story is, don't use the GA4 data directly in Looker Studio. Not only is it not going to give you what you want, but it's also going to get really expensive really fast, because every time you pull data from BigQuery into something like Looker Studio, you incur fees. And while the fees to store the data in BigQuery are relatively inexpensive, like I'm talking about pennies a month, the cost to get it out of, if you pull everything all at once, which is a ton of data, is not cheap. So for sure, you're going to want to take some time to learn how to do this. The best course I found out there to learn how to use BigQuery specifically for GA4 is on Simmer, which is Simo Ahava's training website. It's basically how to use BigQuery for GA4. It's by Simo and Johan van der Werken, and it's honestly the best course I have found out there to learn how to do this stuff right. So if you do want to get into BigQuery, set up the connector for sure. Even if you're not going to use it now, maybe you'll use it later. That's fine. When you're ready to learn, start with that course for sure.
We have some pros here, and you guys are power users, and I love you for that. But just to highlight what Gemma said, I think it's really important to bring up Google Search Console, because if you think about it, Google Search Console is all the pre-click data, and Google Analytics is only post-click data. It doesn't show anything that didn't happen on a website. So I think the integration is nice and it's convenient if you have a client that's kind of low tech and loses their logins and isn't used to, you know, going to different places. I think some of the data in Search Console is different, right? Like it shows your impressions for rankings 1 through 100, which most of the tools don't do. But I think when you export, it only gives you like the top 1,000. So if you have a very large website, I don't know that you will get all of your URLs. Or keywords. Correct. Anyway, I think it's
that's nice.
I love you brought it up.
I mean, it's also important. I mean, I think to set it up, for example, in my case, some of my clients, they don't have BigQuery. So, for this kind of mm-hmm. website, it's also right. useful to have it. Also, here where we go to the next step a little bit, or we'll see it later, it's like you set it up with Search Console, but then you don't see this data on your GA4 interface, because GA4, you need to publish it in order to be able to use it. So it's like you link it, but that's not enough. So, we'll see later, but it's like they give this to you, but not anything else. So in order to go on, once we have our initial setup configuration and we link our GA4 to other accounts, then it's time to start setting up some things that are kind of a little bit difficult, maybe, if you are not used to use Google Tag Manager, especially in the beginning. But once you have it set up, it's like some of the best things of the tool. And here it's everything related to events and conversions. Events, just in case that somebody does not know the difference, events are things that are happening to your website, either if they are interesting or not for your business objectives. And conversions, on the other side, are these events that they are a priority for your business because they are very interesting for you. So here, what we recommend is because Google by default, GA4, they give you some automatically collected events. So here, what we recommend first of all is to define your KPIs, because if you don't know what you need from GA4 from your business that you want to analyze in your website, everything is going to be very confused and you're going to mix a lot of data that maybe it's not interesting for you, and you're going to be mixing in a lot of conversions and events that are not useful. So once you have your KPIs defined, you need to check how are you going to collect this information for your site. What I'm trying to say here is like GA4 in an automatically collected way, or in an automatical way, they set up some events for you. They are doing this in order to facilitate it for you to collect this data, but sometimes it's very confusing for you because it's data that maybe you don't need. So you need to check if the what they are offering for you it's a priority or not for your business. And if not, then you need to create these events in a recommended way that they offer for you, or if not, in a custom way. And here, in order to create these custom events, you need to do it either via GA4 if you can do it in the same tool, or maybe sometimes here it's when you need to go to World Tank Manager and, like you are doing in Universal Analytics, set up your events that or conventions that are a priority for your business.
Something that can be quite useful to make is especially when you end up on like a confirmation page after a form, you know, before in GA3 you will just create a goal based on the URL, but you can't do that anymore in GA4. You can say page view is a goal only if it's this URL. So basically, you have to create another event, like a confirmation page or something like that, based on page view, so that you can activate the conversion on this event. Because one conversion is always an event. Okay, it can be an event in this condition. Right now, it's not possible.
We've got a lot of listeners that obviously consume this show as a podcast afterwards, but we've also got 34 people watching live at the moment and haven't had any comments yet. This is live. So if you do have any questions that you'd like to ask this wonderful panel about GA4, about the challenges that you're having with analytics, about your opinions, perhaps with in relation to what the panel is sharing, please share what your thoughts in the discussion, and we will incorporate that into what is being discussed as well. Andy, shall we move on to the 4 points that you shared with me beforehand? Because you've come up with 4 high-level ideas of how SEOs can get the most value from GA4, starting off with measure top-line search traffic up and down.
Yeah. If you have a client or a boss, this is probably the one that they're looking at. And I would caution everyone about this metric, but it's the easiest to see. Just go to, I will speak through it all for podcast listeners. But David, if you like, I can just share my screen and we can...
Yeah, sure. Let's do that as well.
Sure. So this is in the traffic acquisition report. I'm going to share this screen here. Okay. I'm on just the homepage of, this is Google Analytics 4. So under reports, acquisition, traffic acquisition, I've clicked only 3 times and I can see search traffic. There is top line search traffic for whatever date range. And if I just click this compare tool, to compare to whatever previous time, I can see a search traffic going up and down. Very triggering for teams, bosses, coworkers, clients. I'm not a fan of this for several reasons. One problem with this is that it's not accurate. Nothing in analytics is perfectly accurate, of course. This only is showing us recorded traffic. And if you're doing GDPR and cookie consent properly, it's underreporting everything for starters. But secondly, there's a lot of URLs moving up and down that form this number. So the next metric I think is going to be far more important. I'm going to go to the engagement section, click on landing pages. I'm going to create a filter for this report. And the filter is going to simply be for, I'll use medium, session medium. I know Dana loves first user medium. I'm going to use session medium. Exactly matches organic. Click apply. Now I can see the search traffic per URL going up and down, and you can see they vary wildly. Like this one went up 12%, this one's down 20%. That is much more useful. My friend Jeff Coyle says that average metrics are for average marketers. Go down, drill down one level from that top line. It's not very practical. It's not very actionable. The insights you get from just looking at a top level metric aren't that useful. But when you see the performance per URL, very useful. Now I have insights. Now I can take action. Now this makes sense to me. I can, something that I might care about, something I don't care about. Another way to do this, I'm doing content marketing. I'm just going to filter this whole folder or this whole column for blogs. Now I'm only looking at my content marketing. So that's a great way to do it. Another thing that I can see from here is the engagement rate. For those of us that believe that user interaction signals, whether or not the visitor stayed on the page, spent some time, clicked on something, is a search ranking factor. Many of us believe that user interaction signals are, in fact, a search ranking factor, and that Google knows if the visitor quickly hit the back button, so-called the short click versus long click. Engagement rate is something that SEOs should care about, right? A page with low trust, maybe low EEAT signals or, you know, bad UX or slow loading, that will hurt the engagement rate. So when you see traffic performance dropping and you can't explain it in any other way, jump into GA4 and see if the engagement rate is lower than average. And if so, go look at that page from the perspective of the visitor. Think about how to keep them engaged. Add video, add formatting, add, you know, details and, you know, more subheads and internal linking and calls to action and speed it up. So those are three things. I think my fourth, I had shared a fourth. Oh, I don't do this, but there is a way, I think from the home screen to go to custom insights, you can have analytics notify you if traffic drops. It's a so-called, so if you go to view all insights, I'm on the homepage, I went to view all insights. I can create an insight. And this insight could be for whatever criteria. For example, I had a 20% organic traffic drop last week. Get an email. Very good. That's a useful way that SEOs can use analytics. But so analytics is a very, very useful tool. It's probably the tool that other people in your team are and your clients are paying attention to. Educate them on the value and utility and accuracy of the data and add it as a complement to the other many. I mean, SEO is kind of a tool heavy category. You're going to need this as well, because most of the other SEO tools are simply pre-click data. This is the one where we can actually see traffic from organic. Did they click on the call to action? Traffic from organic. Did they convert? Traffic from organic to these types of pages. Did they convert? Traffic from organic on mobile versus desktop. Do they convert? Do they engage? So we need GA4 for the post-click data. It's really the only way we get it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Andy. And I'd like to come to the rest of the panel and get their thoughts on what Andy shared there as well. Just before we do that, Dana, I think maybe you're the lady to answer this particular question. Actually, I've got the previous question I'll bring up first.
Person who has the most feelings about bounce rate, I think.
Exactly. You don't necessarily have an answer about it, but we'll get your feeling about bounce rate.
I do have an answer. Yeah.
Go for it.
Bounce rate does exist in GA4, FYI. You just don't see it in the default reports. But let me go back to what bounce rate meant in Universal Analytics and why it was the worst metric to use. So let's say I'm on a page in your website and you're not recording anything in Universal Analytics for things like how long someone spent on the page, or if they clicked on a video, or let's say you have a form fill, but it doesn't take you to a second page. You just stay on the page after you fill it out. If you weren't recording any of those events, I could have spent half an hour on your blog post, watched 6 videos, filled out 3 forms. I still would have counted as a bounce, because I didn't do anything that was measured in Universal Analytics. And I think that that is the big thing that people misunderstood about Universal Analytics. People would say, I need to increase bounce rate. Great. I'm going to have an event that fires when you view 1% of the screen. Now your bounce rate is like 0.1%. Congratulations, you get a raise, right? It's just the most ridiculous metric. In GA4, we have engagement rate, which Andy just talked about. A session becomes engaged when one of these things happen. They spend at least 10 seconds with your tab as the active tab. You can up that to 60 seconds in the settings. They go to a second page or they convert. And so in those cases, that's where you're really looking at engaged sessions. Now, bounce rate is the inverse of engagement rate. So the reality is you should just use engagement rate, although bounce rate is there. If you dig around in the other metrics, you can find it. But engagement rate is a much better metric. It actually means something and it's useful. So I would say, like, definitely stick with engagement rate.
I'm sure that our listeners and viewers have gathered by now that each of our panelists can speak about analytics for at least 8 hours, but we've got roughly 45 minutes or so with this great panel. So I'll get straight on to the next point, which I believe is a question for Andy, and that's from Josh, saying, for this engagement landing page section, are these metrics that we're seeing right now, i.e. user sessions, all coming from all traffic channels combined or solely from organic?
Unless you add a filter to change that report so that it only shows traffic from a certain source, it's showing all the landing page traffic from any source, direct, referral, social, anything. So that's why, and if you go back and watch the recording or rewind here, you'll see the very first thing I did after I clicked on engagement landing pages was I clicked add filter, a little tool thing slid out from the right side, and I picked session medium, exactly matches organic. It's a checkbox. It's very easy to find. So if you're doing SEO, that would be the way that we would do it for that. There are other interesting ways to slice up that report. For example, and I would do this probably as an exploration, but to see the difference in engagement rate for organic versus social or organic versus other sources. Engagement rate is a really important thing because, as Dana just said, bounce rate only showed the people who had, you know, sort of a one-page visit. A one-page visit could be 29 minutes. A one-page visit could be 2 seconds. Google knows the difference. So, as I said, I believe in user interaction signals as a search ranking factor. So engagement rate to me is meaningful. Bounce rate, I thought, was always absurd.
And of course, Andy, you shared many. Sorry, who was jumping in there? I was going to off the rest of the panel an opportunity to jump in. But Sebastian, I think you're jumping in.
Yeah, just Andy, about what you just showed, it's interesting that you checked the session medium, but you could have used the user medium as well. And this is something going to be tricky now, is that you have to choose. In GA3, you were basically imposed on last undivided click. And now you have to choose between basically three different attribution models. So the first user, you know, the first session, and then the data-driven, which is a little bit tricky, and you have to go through conversions to get it. And it's always a little bit difficult to know when you create a report, a simple report, if you should use a user medium or session medium. I don't know what's your take on that.
It gets into some technical aspects of GA4, which is that dimension scoped for events, for users, or for sessions? And what I use explorations a lot, so I have to be careful that there's a match between the dimension scoping and the media and the metric scoping. That sounded technical. It's not that technical. I think to keep it simple for people, when I teach it and when I write about it and record videos, I just always suggest using session medium or session source medium. When I change it, though, I don't find drastically different results. And in the end, I'm only looking for data as accurate as it needs to be for me to make a decision. I don't care about perfect data. I'm not interested in ever more accurate data. I'm only trying to find an insight and take an action. Actions affect marketing. Reports don't affect marketing. So for me, session medium is sufficient, but I'm sure Dana has a point of view.
Well, we just had a discussion about this actually after another webinar about using first user versus session. And I think it really is client, you know, context dependent on your company and how people engage with you. So one of my favorite things to do in GA4 is to load up that user report. This is where you look at the first of the acquisition reports. There's traffic and then there's user, look at user. And then if you click the little plus symbol, you can add a second dimension, which is session. Default. And then one of the things is that what you can do then is you can look and see, you know, is there a big difference between first user and session? And if there's no real difference between first user and session, then great, you can use whatever you like. But if you find that people are coming back multiple times and you're tracking them multiple times, because user isn't necessarily what you think it is, it's just a device in most cases. People are having a hard time hearing me.
We can hear you fine. It's okay. Just maybe you're slightly softer than other people, but okay. Go for it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So one of the things that I would say is definitely check that report, compare first user, compare session, see what makes sense for you, because it is unique for every situation. And I don't think anyone can blanket say this is the best way to do it, because how your visitors engage with you and how they convert with you is going to be different and unique to your specific situation.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dana. And Gemma, do you have any thoughts on what Andy shared?
I also, I will use this way of filtering also, not only to know how we acquire users or what they are doing there, also filtering by conversions that they do on our page. So I think that it's useful to take this into account too when you are analyzing this.
Sebastian, you shared a few areas that we could talk about beforehand. One of them was incorrect implementation of the GDPR banner. What are people doing with that?
This is amazing. The number of times I see GDPR banner, which basically are pure nonsense. You know, some things like we just block GA, but then there is Google Ads, Facebook still coming in no matter your choices. So basically, if you don't want to respect GDPR, just remove your banner, you know, at some point. So this is a little bit confusing. For GA, I know that most web analysts, basically in Europe, at least in France, they do block GA without consent. Sometimes I don't. When GA is only for aggregated data, And with the 13 months cookie and with no Google signals and everything, it may be considered sometimes as you use that as a pure metric system, even though there are some things in the Google guidelines that are a little bit tricky, not always GDPR compliant fully. So it's a little bit tricky right now. And now there is a consent mode. So the consent mode is, today is the consent mode thingy because with the DMA, so in Europe, you basically have to use consent mode for your Google Ads campaign if you still want to have a remarketing audience in your data. So a lot of people are basically putting live consent mode now. Consent mode is really useful for GA when you trigger GA only after consent, because you can send denied GA, and still get some estimation, model data into Google Analytics, which is good. However, the problem with that, with the model data, is that if you have a report that have a threshold below 40 users, you may end up with zero users. So basically, if you see some reports where you basically see like 50, 45, 40, and then zero, that basically means that if there is nothing between zero and 40, it's usually around 40. It usually means that you have a threshold issue because you have model data. And if you want to switch that back, you have to use to go in the admin and switch to device-based in reporting identity. It's something that you can do back and forth. It doesn't change your data. It just changes your reports. I don't know if I'm clear about that.
Is there any GDPR plugin or software that you're able to recommend?
I use CookieBot. That's my personal favorite.
Yeah.
CookieBot through Tag Manager is the way to go, I think, is the easiest one I found. Some clients use OneTrust. I'm not as much of a fan of it. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to install one of those like WordPress plugins that says they're going to add a consent banner, because the number one mistake that I see people make is thinking that the addition of the consent banner is going to fix things. Just having the consent banner doesn't actually control the tags and the cookies on the site. You need to connect the consent banner and what the choices people make with what is actually deployed in your website. And that's what consent mode actually means. The banner is just the means of communication between your tag manager or however you're deploying your analytics code and what the user is communicating to you and saying what I want to have tracked and what I don't want to have tracked. I think the worst, I've never actually seen it set up correctly first, like ever in my life. The most egregious example that I saw recently was for this huge multinational company, the banner on their site, they contacted me because they actually got in trouble from Google Ads for doing this wrong. The banner on their site was so badly hooked up that when you click deny on cookies, it actually sent a conversion event off to Facebook. So you really just adding the banner is not enough. And I think that that is the major disconnect that people have about this stuff. So if you want to know if it's working or not, one plugin I really like, it's a Chrome extension called Omnibug. It adds another tab in Chrome Developer Tools. It's super easy to use. All you have to do is load it up, go on your website, say no to cookies, and then watch Omnibug and see if some data still gets tracked. If it does, your consent banner isn't set up correctly. That's as simple as it gets.
Brilliant. And Sebastian, you also mentioned that you're a fan of exporting your data to Looker Studio and BigQuery. So what data do you export, and what are the pros of doing that? Why do you go about doing that?
The thing is that the Looker Studio analytics connector is a little bit limited, especially with segment. So when you want to create segmentations, I want to know people that did this event, and you can't really have a funnel or something like that export into Looker Studio. You have to use the Explorer for that, but there is no GA4 Explorer connectors to Looker Studio. You basically have to recreate your data by yourself, and BigQuery allows you to do that, the thing is that it's not only even limited to the 14 months, we're talking about earlier, it's basically know, it can be up to 5 years, you know, if GDPR and everything is okay for you, you know, it's your data. It's your own BigQuery account. So you can do whatever you want with that. You can even do bad stuff if you want. And the other thing that is really cool is that you can link that to your e-commerce data, to your CRM data, you know, and basically when you're when you sell insurance, for example, usually you have a contact form, and then later on, you know, like a few weeks later, you know, you have people that signed off a contract, you know, but you don't really know, you know, among 100 forms, you know, how many did actually sign off, you know. And when you really link your CRM data to your GA4 BigQuery data, then you can know, okay, I have this users, you know, I know that they send it a form, and this user was actually the one that actually gave me, you know, a few thousand euros. So I know that this campaign was really useful, that this organic campaign to this landing page is actually useful. So it's a way to really put revenue on non-e-commerce website, you know, as well. So basically to link databases outside of the pure GA4 universe.
You mentioned CRM data there a couple of times there as well. Yeah. Is that something that SEOs tend to forget? And is it easy enough to tie up users from your CRM with users within your GA?
I could start talking about that.
Yeah.
It's often we have for our clients, and this depends on consent, of course, and where you're located. I'm not a lawyer. Talk to your digital privacy officer, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things we often do, especially for clients that have offline sales, you know, e-commerce people, lucky you, you can track everything, good for you. Well, not everything. You can track most things. But for those of us who have clients who, you know, or work at companies where you're tracking offline sales, one of the things you can do is in a hidden field in forms on your website, put in what's called the client ID. This is the unique identifier given to visitors from Google Analytics. If you save that in a field in the CRM, then make sure that that CID chases along with them throughout the entire process. And then you can later tie it back to GA4 after the fact and say, you know, we made X amount of revenue from these ad campaigns or from Yelp or from Twitter or from wherever it may be. And so again, like doing this level of tracking does depend on your data, like what you're allowed to track. But if someone says no to cookies, no client ID exists, no data's passed, so then you're fine. You know, so I think that that's the big thing, is being able to track that. And in a lot of cases, for example, we work with a moving company in Texas, and they've been able to track 60 to 70% of the people who book moves through their online booking form back to their original source in GA4. And that's a really rich source of data that helps them make marketing decisions. So I think that that's where just getting that client ID, and if you Google my name and videos, I've talked about it a number of different times exactly how to do it. I think there's one at a conference called Engage in Portland where I go through the process step by step. So definitely watch that if that's something that you're interested in learning more about.
But so rare. I mean, who does? Mm-hmm. In my experience, a lot of SEOs, and I'll just say the worst SEOs, all they care about is rankings. Mm-hmm. Better SEOs care about rankings and click-through rate. Better SEOs care about actual traffic. Really good SEOs care about traffic just to the key pages and not just traffic to any page. You know, the best SEOs care about marketing qualified leads, care about conversions, care about organic traffic to which pages lead to actual business. Very rare, very unusual. That's why I think EEAT was ridiculous. It's like, now you care about trust? Why didn't you care about trust before? Oh, yeah. Google said trust is important. Now, wait, it's not about Google. That's about your visitor. Like, why do SEOs care so much about rankings and traffic and only cared about trust and authority when Google said it mattered? So no, I honestly, David, I've never heard of an SEO using any CRM data. Never heard of it.
Well,
very rare.
The SEOs who do use CRM data, those are the ones who get raises and promotions. So yeah. I do recommend, like, this is where you really need to step out of your little SEO land and mm-hmm. present things that are like, think about how can you tell people that how do you get raises? You prove that you're making money for the company you work for. You prove that you're making money for the client you work for. And how do you do that? By tying together SEO data with actual business outcomes. And I think that that is something where if you feel like you're stuck, like this is the way to get out of wherever you're stuck in terms of like being able to charge more with clients or being able to make more at your job or get that promotion. Like this is how you do it. Stop talking about rankings. No one except for you cares, and start talking about actual business income outcomes from your SEO data.
I'm pretty sure it's going to change at some point, because with Google Ads, you know, you are more and more forced to send your first party data to Google Ads, you know, like to mm-hmm. make some direct connections between your CRM, e-commerce data, whatever you have, you know, directly to Google Ads, you know, like with the offline import, with the audience import, and as SEA and SEO are quite close, you know, SEO will say, yeah, there is something going on with this. Maybe I should care as well about the actual users.
Dana, you also say that there are many metrics that SEOs misunderstand. So what are a couple of those metrics and why do they misunderstand them?
Well, I already talked about bounce rate, so we don't need to cover that again, but please watch that part again. If you're just watching this now, go back to bounce rate, rewind that part. The thing that I think that SEOs really misunderstand is the idea of users and sessions, because users only counts if you're working with a website that has on-site logins and you're sending that on-site login data off to GA4. If you aren't sending that on-site login data off to GA4, a user is just a device. And you could only track users across devices for a brief moment when Google Signals actually impacted your the data you saw in GA4. Google Signals data is no longer shown in GA4, so a user is just a device. On my laptop, I am one session, one user. I'm on my phone, I am one session, one user. There is no way to tie me together unless I am logged into your website. So that is something really to keep in mind when you're thinking about users. Those are just devices. So if you, for example, like, let's say I'm going to book a pest control service for my house. I go on my phone, I find a local service. I say, hey, this looks pretty good. I text the link off to my wife and I say to her, hey, what do you think? She says, no problem. I know when I can be home for them, I'm going to book it. How am I supposed to attribute that? It's going to come in as direct traffic, no. Right? Those yep. are the kinds of things that happen every single day. Mm-hmm. And so I think by explaining these differences as well, some of the pressure comes off in terms of analytics must be perfect. It's never going to be perfect. It never was perfect. I think that's why people hate GA4, because it shows the imperfections, whereas UA did a better job of hiding them. And certainly, you know, explain what users means, explain what sessions means, so that you and whoever else you report to are on the same page when it comes to what these metrics are and what their limitations are.
And Andy, sorry, you're just about to say something as I asked Dana the question there.
That point about prioritizing qualified visitors and actual leads and bottom line business outcomes, there's a useful approach to GA4 for this. If you go back to that landing page report and you create a comparison to show people that land on, for example, blog posts versus people that land on other pages, you can see the conversion rate for those two types of visits. You'll immediately see that people who start their visit on sales pages, service pages, product pages, home pages, 10 times or 20 times the conversion rates compared to people who just have information intent and land on blog posts. Now you know exactly which pages to focus on. If you go look at the landing pages report from organic traffic and check the conversion rates, you'll see that some of these landing pages are worth 10, 20, 100 times more to that brand. Why don't you focus on those pages? You'll give your client 10, 20, 100 times the value by every visit. A visit to certain pages is worth far more to the brand than visits to other pages. So, you know, digital marketing, there's too many options. So the key is prioritization. We need to prioritize the search performance of landing pages that correlate with conversions and MQLs.
So let's finish off by asking each of our panelists to share their number one takeaway from today's discussion, and also just confirming who they are and where you can find out more information about them. So Andy, shall we stick with you? What would you say is the number one takeaway from today, from your perspective, and where can the listener find out more about you?
Well, I love where Gemma started us, and in that setup process, please, data retention 14 months. You have to do that. So I'll let's go back to the basics. You can find me in Barcelona hanging out with Gemma later this year. I visit there for school, and hopefully she and I will meet.
Yes, hopefully.
LinkedIn's my best social network, Andy Crestadina, and I blog at my website, which is orbitmedia.com.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for coming on, Andy. Also with us was Sebastian. So Sebastian, what's your takeaway and where can people find you?
I'd say that my takeaway, simple takeaway, is to use Looker Studio to get the data-driven source, so basically source and the channel and then the conversions that you can choose and then use. So basically, you have everything in one table, and this is the only way, as far as I know, to get everything in one table is on Looker Studio. You can do that in GA4 itself. And you can find me, basically, I'm still a Twitter guy. So you can find me on Twitter with S. Monnier.
Thank you so much, Sebastian. Dana.
Hi. I would say that one of my biggest takeaways is for people to just read what those metrics mean in GA4. And you might have seen the screen share that Andy was doing. There's a little pencil icon up at the top right of reports. Mm-hmm. Click that. Remove any metrics that aren't relevant to you. If you don't have an e-commerce site, don't show revenue. Why does GA4 include revenue by default? I don't know. They just do. So if you don't have an e-commerce website, you're never going to have e-commerce. Just remove that revenue metric. Ignore what doesn't matter to you. Really important to do with these reports, because the default ones are, you know, they're bad for everybody. Make them right for you. In terms of finding me, I mostly spend my time on LinkedIn now, although I am on Twitter as well. Dana Di Tommaso, if you spell that right, good job. And in terms of what's next for me, I have a course, Practical GA4, coming out at the end of March. And my course, Analytics for Agencies, is out now. Both of them are on kpplaybook.com. And if you use the code MAJESTIC, you can get 20% off the course.
Wow. Thank you so much for coming on, Dana. Absolutely superb to have you here as well. Gemma, what's your takeaway and where can people find you?
One of my biggest takeaway is that the importance of probably setting up events and conversions, because if not, anything will matter. I mean, at the end of the day, we need to know what's happening, the priority key things on our website. And I will check this once in a while, although it's recommended to set up in the initial configuration, because sometimes you set up a plugin and you think that everything is working fine and it's not. So double check this in a periodic week, for example, or in a month. And you can find me here in Barcelona hanging out. So whenever you come here, either if it's for vacation, a nice place to come, or an event, you can let me know and we can go on a walk on the beach.
Absolutely superb. Gemma, thank you so much for joining us as well. A wonderful panel. We could keep on discussing this for hours, but perhaps we'll have to come back for part two at some point in the future. We will see. I just want to thank the audience as well. We had some great interaction there as well. AGB the Third, many people on LinkedIn, Tim Grant, Michael Allen, Boulevard Digital, Rachel. We have had a decent amount of interaction. Josh Gann there as well. Thank you so much for adding your comments. It's very much appreciated when you interact a little bit more, add so much value, and we can answer questions and prove that we're live as well. I've been your host, David Bain. You've been listening to the Majestic SEO panel. If you want to join us live next time, sign up at majestic.com/webinars. And of course, check out our other series at SEOin2024.com. Until next time, take care.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Yeah.